Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature center paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, and she alternates the weeks in Spanish and English. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesdays features nature spirituality with none other than Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursday for Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and we hope you try them all. I'm really looking forward to chatting with our guest tonight. He's a favorite of all of ours. I've attended many of his workshops at festivals, I own many of his books, and he knows his stuff. And even though he'll deny it, he's a very nice man. We're going to be talking with author Jason Mankey. Jason Mankey read his first book on witchcraft in the seventh grade, and at age 22 dedicated his life to the craft. Today, Jason is a third-degree Gardnerian high priest and runs two witchcraft covens in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife, Ari. He's a popular speaker at pagan and witchcraft events across North America and Great Britain, and he's recognized by his peers and his authority on the Horned God, Wiccan history, occult influences in rock and roll, and heavy metal music. Jason is a best-selling witchcraft author for Willellen, channel manager for Pathios Pagan, one of the largest pagan blogging websites in the world. He writes at Pathios on the blog Raise the Horns and at the magazine Witches and Pagans. He also hosts his podcast, Witches, Whiskey, and Wit with Jason Mankey. He's the author of Transformative Witchcraft, The Witch's Athame, The Witch's Book of Shadows, and the co-author of The Witch's Altar. Tonight we're going to chat about his latest book, The Horned God of the Witches. And be sure to check out his Patreon page at www.patreon.com/panmankey. Let's welcome Jason to Circle Talk. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you for having me. I'm not sure I can live up to that introduction of myself. It makes me sound so much more than I think of myself as, so thank you. I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, we're all big fans here, so we're so excited to have you on. And we talked about it's been a while, and it's been a couple years, and wow, the world has really changed this past year with the pandemic. I hope you and Ari and you all have been safe and healthy this past year?
We have been pretty lucky. My wife works in healthcare, but she's not patient-facing, so she's had to go into work this entire time, but her lab is pretty safe, and she was one of the first people to be vaccinated in our area, having gotten vaccinated completely by, I think, the end of January. So, yeah. So we've been doing okay. It's just been lonely. I miss being at pagan festivals, I miss being on the road, and I miss doing things.
It's funny. I do too. We talked about it just a little bit earlier. I really miss the interaction and seeing people. But I have to admit, a lot of groups and covens and people have adapted very quickly to Zoom and other ways to connect.
That's true. And some of those things I like. Some of those things I really like. I love the idea of the online virtual festivals where hundreds of people can get together and you don't have to leave your house. And it's a lot more cost effective for people. They don't have to travel. They don't have to rent a hotel room. They don't have to buy camping gear. So I hope that stays. I do like that part of it. But I'll tell you, as a presenter, I miss the reaction from the crowd, from people, you know, because when I'm doing stuff, I'm always like telling penis jokes in the middle of stuff, and when you tell the joke and there's no laughter because everybody's muted on Zoom, It just
awkward.
Like hurts your heart a little bit. It's a little awkward. I hope people are laughing somewhere else, you know? So that's rough. That's tough.
Absolutely. And I'm the same way. I've been able to attend places that I wouldn't be able to take time off from work or afford to go. So I agree, but I, like you, I think once this pandemic's lifted, I think people have a need to get together, but I think there's always going to be, for a lot of the bigger festivals, I have a feeling that there's always going to be some type of virtual component.
I hope so. You know, I know there's been a couple of bigger online things within the last year, 2 years or whatever, and I want those to continue. And then some of the smaller festivals have also done a lot of online classes. Pagan Unity
yeah.
Festival did sort of a hybrid. They had a live event. However, they also had classes with, you know, speakers that were virtual like I was.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
you know, some,
I think you're going to see a lot of that.
Doing both. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to hug people and get back to that too.
And I have to admit, I've not been as successful, and I don't particularly like Zoom rituals. I think it's gotten better. I remember the first ones I see. In fact, the first one that I tried to attempt, I think I knocked over a candle. It was awkward. Literally the first Zoom one, and this is like at the beginning of the pandemic. This is like over a year and a half ago. They basically did a regular ritual, but just was going to try to film it. And when they called quarters, they kept leaving we couldn't see them. They kept leaving because it was just so funny. So I think people have gotten much better at that, but I think that's a whole new skill set is doing ritual on Zoom than in person.
I think so too. I know that in our coven, I tried really hard not to do it for a long time because I just
mm-hmm.
don't think you
That's
can really
me.
Replicate, yeah, what you know, like especially a small coven. I don't think you can really replicate what you do as a small coven in a small space online. But eventually we started
mm-hmm.
doing it, and really it feels more like you're just kind of reading a ritual in a way, because everything that's
mm-hmm.
happening is happening in your head more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a ritual space in our house that our coven meets at. So what we started doing is we would put a camera in the ritual room. And then while
mm-hmm.
we were doing the ritual, like all reading our lines and stuff, the thing
mm-hmm.
that was always in focus was the ritual room. So it was kind of like we were trying to take people back to that space.
So that's nice. Yeah, I know Selena worked with me, and she gave me some great tips, something as simple as have everyone have a candle at home and kindle their candle all together. So different things that you can do, you know, all together but it is a different skill set. So, it'll be interesting to see as we move, hopefully, out of this pandemic in the next year, what stays and what goes and what changes have kind of been permanent changes in our faith.
It's so strange right now because we're kind of in this sort of middle. Like, the pandemic has definitely not ended. You know, I mean, in
right.
a lot of states now, hospitalizations are as high as they've ever
right.
been. But there have been in-person events over the last couple of months, some of which have required
Absolutely.
Proof of vaccination, some of which have not. I know I have things on my calendar in October, which will be the first public things I've done. Convocation in Detroit, which probably now the biggest indoor festival with sort of the retirement of Pantheacon. I know
mm-hmm.
that they're going full forward, and I would be really surprised if that doesn't happen. People may have to wear masks indoors. But I'm guessing it's
mm-hmm.
going to happen for sure. So it's a really strange time because we're in the middle of the pandemic, but we're starting to do things. You know, it's
right.
it's really strange. It's really strange, Deborah.
Yeah. Well, I think being also in the medical profession like your wife, I think we thought things we weren't expecting the Delta variant, and so things were lifting up. Do you know what I mean? We thought we were over it. And so now we realize we're not, and some people haven't shifted yet. So, yeah, I think we're in a real limbo space on, and I don't think anybody wants the country to shut down again. So we're kind of really in a limbo space. But I have to give you kudos. Again, I'm a big fan, and I read your blog, and I loved your article, Perfect Love and Perfect Trust About Vaccination. So
yeah, well,
it was really, really good.
I feel like, you know, I don't know, like it feels weird being sort of a public figure or whatever, you know, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. But I feel as if people read my books and like me and listen to what I have to say, I have an obligation mm-hmm. to try to do the right thing as much mm-hmm. as possible. And to me, getting vaccinated is doing the right thing. So I really wanted right. to share that experience with people, especially if somebody had reservations about doing it. It is
right.
not just about us when we get vaccinated. It's about the people that we interact with. It's about taking the vaccine for the people who can't take a vaccine because of like legitimate health issues. It's about keeping
right.
the people that you love safe. It's about keeping their children safe who can't be vaccinated yet. And the Delta variant is really bad for children. It's really bad.
Absolutely.
So yeah, perfect love and perfect trust. Absolutely. With getting that vaccine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And being vaccinated yourself so you can be there for other people. So yeah, that was a really great article. So
thank you.
Well, you've been really busy since the last time we talked. You've had several books, and I'm really, really excited about your new book. And it's funny, when you just published your book on the Horned God, I kind of thought, hadn't you written that before? Because since I've known you, you've always had a deep love, and you always talk about the Horned God.
So this book is, you know, was written in the last couple of years, The Horned God of the Witches, which
uh-huh.
just came out in June. But when I was, like, contemplating being a witchcraft writer, the first book that I ever really tried to write was a book called The Horned God. I've been doing workshops mm-hmm. on The Horned God since the year 2000, probably maybe even a year or two before that. I mean, I was doing these talks at, you know, all over the country, and they were usually getting pretty good feedback. And in 2005, Christopher Penzack saw me talk about the Horned God, and he was like, you really need to submit that to Llewellyn. Here's some information, you know. And at that point, I'd been trying to write this book for a little while, and I sent Llewellyn some sample chapters, and they promptly said this is not really, like, up to snuff, and it's not really what we're looking for.
You're kidding.
No, and I cried a little bit, and then I self-published a version of that book. I think back in 2005. So there are people who have a book by me called The Horned God, not called The Horned God
uh-huh.
of the Witches. And I mean, I
uh-huh.
sold a couple hundred of those books at festivals, but the current book is much better. It's much more in-depth. And Llewellyn was
mm-hmm.
right to reject the book all those years ago. I was not a particularly good writer. You know, I just thought that I could walk in and sit down on my computer and write a book. And
mm-hmm.
you really need to write often if you're going to be a writer. It's really hard to just do it sometimes and come up with something good. Writing is like any other muscle. You have to develop it. You have to use it or it atrophies. So I really wasn't writing when I tried to write for the first time. But when I started blogging back in 2011, that's really when things
mm-hmm.
opened up, because I found my voice online. I found a way of communicating that was effective. Also, I think publishing changed a lot. I've always been a very conversational writer, and for a while that was looked down upon. You weren't supposed to be conversational
right.
with your books. And then I think the online culture sort of changed that, and now it's something that people expect in books and look forward to. So I was maybe a little ahead of my time, and now people have caught up to how I always had preferred to write anyways. But yeah, so there is an earlier version of that book, and it's not good, and it'll never be in print again, though you can read all of it on my Patreon page for only $2 a month.
There you go. Well, listen, we're going to talk about that in a second, but I think it's so interesting that you said so, because I'm always curious of people who have creative talent, and some people, like you say, it just comes and goes. Some people are very structured and disciplined. It sounds like you're pretty disciplined, that you make yourself write every so often so you keep that muscle going.
It's not even the discipline. It's the fact that I have deadlines. So the last time I signed contracts with Llewellyn for books, I've
mm-hmm.
been signing like two or three. I've been signing two or three at a time, which
oh, wow.
is a really kind of a dumb thing to do, because it really sort of dictates your life going forward. But it's never just been one. It's always like, you know, we'll contract for this and then this and then this. Like Yeah, last time I signed contracts, it was three books. So, I mean, there all of a sudden, there's the next 3 years of your life before you. And I'm still doing, like, almanacs for Llewellyn because that is fun to do, and I really enjoy that, like, Spell-A-Day almanac and Babbitt almanac.
Uh-huh.
Those are fun to do. And then, you know, I'm still blogging periodically and writing new workshops and stuff. So, yeah, I have to write every day just so I don't get too behind on the deadlines.
I think that's great. So tell me about your book. And I will tell you, because, again, I have most of your books, and I didn't have this one. So I was Googling and looking where to get it, and I saw that this book is an audiobook form.
Mm-hmm. It's my first
that
book that's
really
ever been
cool.
An audiobook. Yeah, and I think,
oh.
I think previously most of my books are too long for audiobooks.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the Llewellyn author who turns in like a 120,000 word book, and a lot
uh-huh.
most Llewellyn books are about half that size, so nobody
uh-huh.
wants to read for that long. But The Horned God of the Witches, even before the book came out in print, they had decided that they were going to turn it into an audiobook, which was really
oh, yeah.
flattering because they had a lot
oh,
of confidence
yeah.
in it. And yeah, and it's strange though because it's Llewellyn, so authors aren't reading their own books. I wish that I was reading it. It was really disconcerting to hear somebody else read my words because they don't speak
oh,
in
Oh, I never
native.
Thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to listen to it. I was very excited about it. And the guy who's reading my book has read some big projects. He's done a lot of audiobooks over the years, and they asked me
uh-huh.
if his voice would be fine, and I said yes. But once I started listening to it, I was like, you should pause there. You know what? Where's the inflection? There should be an inflection there. Yeah, and it
that
just
is
didn't
so
sound
funny.
Like me. Yeah, so maybe one of these days I'll be able to read my own book. That would be nice.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, as somebody who's a big audiobook, because I travel a lot, and as an author, you'll love to hear this, I don't either buy the book or audiobook. Usually I buy the book, and if I really like it, I will buy the audiobook just to listen to it. So, yeah, so I think that just will give you a wider audience. So.
My wife's like that, too. She does that a lot. Like, she reads books, and then she'll buy it on audio if she likes the book.
Yeah.
And sometimes audiobooks yeah. can be superior in some ways. Like, listening to Anthony Bourdain read one of his books with the way
yeah.
that Anthony Bourdain talked is intoxicating. It's, like, hard to turn off. And especially with the popularity of podcasts and the easy availability of audiobooks now, it's a much bigger market than it was just 20 years ago when you had to buy a CD that was like you had to buy it on CD and it was like 10 CDs. It was
right.
super super costly and stuff. Or maybe you could
oh,
rent
yeah.
it like DVDs and VHS tapes back in the 80s and 90s. So today,
absolutely.
Like we're super lucky when it comes to audiobooks.
Absolutely. And I am old school and I'll tell my age, my grandchild, I found some DVDs that were like storybooks on tape. And I bought them, and my son stared at me, and I go, this is for when you travel. He goes, Mom, my car doesn't have a CD player. I go, what? He has a relatively,
yeah.
like a two-year-old car. Cars don't even have CD players anymore. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. He said, welcome to the 1920s. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So.
When I go to festivals, you know, I always want to support artists. And, you know, sometimes, like, music artists, and usually they're just selling CDs. And I don't have a working
mm-hmm.
CD player anymore. I'm like, you gotta let me buy a T-shirt or something. I can't buy your CD. I can't play it.
So take us through your book. Is it talk about, I can't imagine you don't talk about Pan in this book or Kernanos, or tell us all about your book.
So I wanted to write a book about how people who self-identify as witches see the Horned God and where a lot of those ideas about how they see the Horned God came from. So mm-hmm. the book talks about the nature of deity. It talks about myths in ancient history. I mean, there's kind of a myth within a lot of modern witchcraft traditions that the Horned God is this thing that's in every culture, and it goes back to 15,000 years ago. Some of that is more romantic conjecture mm-hmm. than truth, but it's still a part of the story. So it's in the book. But then it talks about gods in the ancient world who have really contributed to how we talk about the Horned God today. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
one of those is Pan. Also, a little bit Dionysus is in there, and then Kernonos. There are rituals throughout the book. There's a ritual for meeting the Horned God, and then a ritual for Pan with two or more people. So it's kind of a adult-only ritual, you know, which is fun. Big chapter on Kernonos, some activities about working with Kernonos. Though the Green Man doesn't have horns necessarily, I feel like the Green Man has always been a part of the Horned God myth as we see him today. So I wanted to include a chapter on the Horned God and then connecting with that power. And then there's a bit about Hearn the Hunter, which is a little more contemporary than a lot of people think. The first mention of Hearn only really dates back to, I think, 1596 when Hearn shows up in the Merry Wives of Windsor by William Shakespeare. Yeah, so not always what everybody thinks. And then, and this is like when there are bad reviews of the book, and as an author, like the bad reviews, you don't remember the good ones. It's the bad ones. You know, they stay with you and they hurt you. But I write about Ellen of the Ways, who is a female reindeer goddess, and it's a figure that wasn't.
I must be unsophisticated. I've never heard of Ellen of the Ways. Tell me about
that.
And
that's fair, because I really hadn't before a couple of years ago. And Ellen is a goddess. I would use the term she's a revealed goddess. She's a goddess that's not really in mythology, but if you read between the lines, it suggests that there may be a goddess along the lines of Ellen of the Ways. And somebody started writing about her in the 80s. And over time, that really picked up. And I would be doing Horned God workshops, especially the last 5 or 6 years. And then people would ask me, Jason, what about Ellen of the Ways? Jason, what about Ellen of the Ways? Or I'd see if somebody with a T-shirt with Ellen of the Ways on it. Or I'd go to a merch stand, and they had these Ellen of the Ways statues, not made by an artisan from our community who only made 20 of these statues, but made by one of those major statue manufacturing companies who makes their statues in China. So they're making them in bulk. So regardless of whether or not Ellen existed in the ancient world, she's certainly here with us now because all of these things are happening, and there are some books about her specifically. So I put her in the book because, I mean, to me, I think that's just another way of connecting with the energy of the Horned One. So there's a little bit about her in the book, and as I said, that's
her mythos.
People hate.
What's her mythos? Is she Celtic? Is she Greek? What is her mythos? I mean, does she have one?
So it would be British. There's a character named Ellen or Helen, specifically in the Mabinogian or the Mabinogi, if you are from the UK. Dave the Bard is always like, Jason, it's Mabinogi. It's not Mabinogian, like you Americans say it. So, in deference to Dave, I always have to put that in there. But there's a character named Helen in there, or Ellen. And a lot of the characters in the Mabinogian, the Mabinogi, are gods, most likely, that have been sort of stripped of their divinity. So that's the best place to start. There's also a road named after a figure named Helen that predates any story that's in the Mabinogian that was built by the Romans, which suggests something. There's also, curiously, a goddess figure that's been found in France. Back then it would have been called Gaul, and it's the same area that Kernonos is worshipped. But there's a figure of like a female antlered deity. So that's really interesting. There's no name attached to it or anything, but it could be related to something like this. So, yeah, I would definitely say the figure is British or Welsh and goes back to, 2,000 years ago, at least possibly. It's really confusing. People want deities sometimes to be preserved in amber. Like, here is this myth from 2,000 years ago, and it says this, that, and the other. But what we have from the ancient world, even in well-attested societies like the Greeks, I mean, a lot of it is really ambiguous, and we don't know exactly what happens there. I think Ellen is an example of that. But, yeah, there's some stuff people can read, and you can read it online, too. Carolyn Wise is the first person, I think, that ever talked about Ellen of the Ways. So that's all in the book. And then it kind of gets into the sort of modern influences of the Horned God. My favorite chapter is probably the rebirth of Pan. Pan sort of, like many of the Greek gods, sort of goes through this period where they're not really being worshipped like they were. The rise of Christianity sort of pushed them away. But they return in literature and art. And in the 19th century, Pan really returned in literature, especially in England, where he becomes the most written about god in all of English literature in this very short period of time. And people began to look at Pan as a way to connect with nature. This is during the Industrial Revolution, so people were disconnected from the natural world. And this figure they wrote about was a way to connect with things. So all of a sudden, Pan shows up in these poems, and these are poems by major poets, Keats and Shelley and Wordsworth. And then he shows up in stories like The Wind in the Willows, which, you know, is a children's book, but not a children's book. Mm-hmm. And the Pan chapter just brings tears to my eyes. And then, of course, there's some other things that aren't probably in the public perception as much, but are important to witches and pagans, like Aleister Crowley's Hymn to Pan. So that's in the book. And then there's a couple of other things that have influenced the Horned God over the years, and some people are really uncomfortable with some of these. How people perceive the devil, especially in the late ages, late Middle Ages, early modern period, has really had an impact on how people perceive the Horned God. People use things from the witch trials of that period in ritual, and the primary deity of the witch trials was a horned figure that most people called the devil, but, you know, we know that it's really not. So I write about that.
Right.
And then I write about the Horned God as being a god of death. Oftentimes we think about the Horned God as being exclusively, the natural world and nature, and I'm going to go run through the forest and take off all of my clothes, and then I will be one with the Horned One. And, you know, there's a different side to him as well. And that was there since the very beginning of sort of modern witchcraft. Gerald Gardner writes about the Horned God as a god of death in the 1950s, and we kind of got away from that. And then the book ends – oh, and then it talks about the sacrificial god. There's an idea that the god sort of sacrifices himself in the fall so that the crops can, you know, come into, like, full bloom or harvest or whatever. So that's in the book. So there's a ritual to John Barleycorn for that. And then I talk about the evolution of the Horned God in Wicca, which is really more of a de-evolution. And then I talk about the Horned God in traditional witchcraft and, you know, going through the major texts of those traditions. And then there's one final ritual. So that's most of the book. I'm, you know, I was lucky.
Oh,
I'm, like,
it sounds exciting.
Table of contents while we're talking. You know, all these
You're
things,
so funny.
You know, kind of jumble in your head. Since the Horned God book, I've finished two other books. So it's really crazy, like, how long it takes for a book to get published. You know, by the time it gets published, you've written one or two other things.
That is so funny. Well, you know, one of the reasons why I'm excited about this book, and I think it's really good, when I first started this faith, Wicca was, until I studied with a tradition, what I experienced or what I saw was very goddess-centered. Kind of like, you didn't really talk about the god, and he was kind of her consort, and he was kind of there but didn't do much. Everything was very focused on goddess worship and goddess. So, yeah, so I think this is really, we don't have very much information or literature or academic study, I think, about the Horned God as we do the goddess. So I think this is really exciting.
Yeah, there really haven't been a whole lot of Horned God books. I think for a long time I was told that Llewellyn didn't publish them because they didn't sell. So that was one reason. But also I think a lot of us, especially if we came to the craft in the 90s, early 2000s or 70s and 80s, you know, what really made witchcraft, especially Wiccan witchcraft, unique was the idea of the goddess. And that's why I fell in love with Wicca, is because of the goddess. I mean, that was my primary focus for several years until I kind of got nudged by the antlers and the horns of the Horned God to kind of go a different way. So, yeah, I understand that impulse to write about the goddess and why it's been there. But and to my knowledge, there's only really been three or four books that are about the Horned God, and only really two from major presses. I mean, there was D.J. Conway's Lord of Light and Shadow, which came out in the 90s, and then the Janet and Stuart Farrar's The Witch's God. So, I mean, there really aren't a whole lot of books. So the time was right. Also, I think traditional witchcraft has helped a lot. That particular practice puts a renewed emphasis on the god, on the Horned God. So I think that helped my cause to get this book published.
Well, we're very excited about it. And again, I'm excited about the audiobook, and I vote for all your books to go on audiobook. So so tell us what books you've written. What's next? What was your, do they give you a subject, or is there something like, do you have pieces of paper around your house of snippets of ideas you have for books? Or because I knew you before you wrote a book, and now you've become quite a prolific author.
It really is strange. I mean, my first book came out in only 2016, and now I have 7 books out in 2021.
Right.
You know, that's really fast.
A lot.
The first book I wrote was The Witch's Athame, and Llewellyn asked me to write that book. It was a book in a series. There was kind of an outline they wanted me to follow. As long as I filled in those, you know, blanks, you know, it was going to be fine. And so I said, sure, you know, I remember that email really specifically. Like, oh, my God, they want me to write a book. I, like, danced around my house. I was so excited. My wife denies, and I love my wife. She's the best witch I know. She's the best person I know. But I told her, and I distinctly remember her saying, how much is this going to cost me? when I said that they'd asked me to write a book. But after that, though, all the ideas were mine, with one exception. You know, I would just send them, like, an email, like, I have this idea for a book, and I would send them the chapter outline of the book, and then they would either say yes or no. You know, usually they have said yes the last couple of years. The Horned God book, I had to sort of sell it to them. They're like, you know, we have the original version of this that you tried to, you know, get us to do a long time ago. Why is this one any different? Why should we publish this one? So that one's a little tougher of a sell. But all the ideas have been mine, except for the 10th book that I'm going to write. And this is the book that I'm now looking at writing because I finished the 9th book recently. And that's a biography of Ray Buckland. And they asked me to write that. So that's going to be an endeavor. The two other books before that, though, because I'll have 2 books come out before the Buckland book. There's The Witch's Book of Spellcraft. It's The Witch's Book of Spellcraft plus a bunch of other words. The Witch's Book of Spellcraft, a practical guide connecting with the magic of candles, crystals, plants, and herbs. That is coming out in March of 22, so that's not too far away. And I wrote that with my wife, and I wrote that with my friends Matt and Amanda, who are in our coven. So there's some assistance there with that book. And then yesterday we just turned in The Witch's Guide to the Greek Gods, which I co-wrote with Estrella Taylor. And that should be out next year, too, but very late, like December or November of 2022.
I know you co-authored The Witch's Altar. Do you like that? Is it a different experience writing with someone else?
It is and it isn't. With Tempest, we just sort of divided up the work. And one of us would write one section, one of us would write a different section, and that was it. And then only, like, the very last section of that book did we truly collaborate. We were just trying to play to each other's strengths. You know, like, she's like, you write really good rituals. I write really good spells. You do good history. I do good other things. You know, let's just smush a book together. And I thought that was a really great idea. We also had a few glasses of wine that night that might have contributed to our plan to write a book together. But that was really fun. Tempest is amazing. I love her so much, and I'm so glad she did the cover to the Horned God book. Yeah. With Estrella, I've known Estrella since 2017 when I met her at Pagan Spirit Gathering back at Turtle Creek. And one of the great things about Estrella is she had not written witchcraft stuff before. And we struck up a really good friendship. And I was like, you should try writing witchcraft stuff. Because before that, she had written just fiction. And so she started blogging at Pathos. And then she wrote Intuitive Witchcraft, which came out like a year ago, I think, maybe a little over a year ago, which is a really great book. And she's a fantastic writer. And we were like, you know, kind of discussing maybe things that we could do together. And we both really love the Greek gods. So We had this idea we'll do a book about the Greek gods together.
Oh,
so
that's
it's really fun.
Now, when can we expect these books to be?
Yeah, the Greek gods book probably will be out in November of next year, maybe December.
Okay.
I think since we turned it in and we turned it in like right now, usually it takes about a year after the book is turned in for it to come out. So I'm thinking it'll be like the later part of 2022. And yeah, and then, you know, I have another idea. I think I'm going to write another book with another writer pretty soon. Maybe it's just because I like seeing my name on many on so many things. If I write a book with somebody else, I don't have to write all of it. So it just gets more books with my name on them out that much faster.
And I will say that your books, the covers are beautiful. I remember your first book. And actually, I think it was Convocation. I forgot where I was. And you had this book, and you said, but I don't like the cover. And you said you thought it looked too childish. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
That has to be the Witch's Athame cover.
Yes, yes.
That,
it was your first book,
yes.
And you said, I don't like this cover. And they changed it. So I laughed. I remember you saying that.
Yeah, that was the whole thing with that whole series, because it was called the Witch's Tool series. And I guess most of them didn't sell very well when they came out because people thought the contents were pretty juvenile because they looked like young adult novels. And the idea was that all of these covers were supposed to look like classic postcards from the 20th century, but it didn't quite work out that way. Sales did get much better when they changed the covers. Covers play a big role. Mickey Mueller, who wrote The Witch's Mirror, she was telling me she went to a book signing once at Barnes & Noble, and it was like a big night for local authors, and they had like 8 different writers there. And they put her in the young adult section because they thought her book was a young adult fiction book.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So the covers really didn't work. So
that
I was really happy
fun.
That they, I was happy they changed the covers.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, your books are really good. So I highly recommend them. If folks want to buy your book, where all can they go? Where can they buy your book at?
Oh, I'm a Llewellyn author, so they're everywhere. You know, you can buy them online.
Amazon.
You know, you should be I think the best place to buy your book is at the local witch store. Because local witch shops provide you with stuff that you can buy to help you practice. They give advice. Mm-hmm. They also are community spaces. So anything you can do to support those stores, I think, is great. So if you have to buy it on Amazon, that's fine. It's there, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it should be everywhere.
As someone who lives in a community that no longer has a witch store, I totally agree. There's not that many left, and we should really frequent them and to keep them, here.
We really need those. We need that sort of neutral space where people can come together. You know, it's difficult as witches. We don't have churches necessarily. We don't have spaces that we can go to, you know, that are easily available. But our stores are those spaces, so we need to support those stores. One other funny thing about the Athame book, though, is there are several Llewellyn authors who, when asked, you know, what you want your cover to look like, they take a picture of the Athame book, the original cover, and say, I don't want it to look like this.
See, you're kind of infamous.
Yeah, and I had nothing to do with the cover. I had nothing to do with the cover. They just sent me something.
I remember you saying that when it first came out. You said, this is a really good book. I don't like the cover. Don't look at the cover. So I just remember that. That was so funny.
That was all them.
I think we have that book, so maybe it's worth money now. It's been collector's item. There's not that many of them. Oh, that's so funny. And I'm glad to hear you say Athame. Years ago, probably the first gathering I went to, someone corrected me and told me that I was saying it wrong. It was Athame. I'm so sorry.
No, it's really very regional how that word is pronounced. I say Athame.
Funny?
I say Athame because that's the Midwestern pronunciation. That's how I like to say it. Athame is, I think, how they say it here in California. And sometimes I will say it both ways without thinking about it. a Sammy is most likely, or some variation of a Sammy is most likely the original pronunciation of the word.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So, but it's a made-up word. It doesn't exist until the late 1940s when Gerald Gardner uses it for the first time in High Magic's Aid. There are variations of the word from a French word, which means to cut, but Gardner sort of made the word up. So I don't really think that anyone is ever mispronouncing it. That's just so petty when people are like,
I think that's
that
funny.
Is an athame and not an athame, you know, and it's like, whatever.
And I had somebody once say, put it in the movie The Craft. I go, okay, there you go. That's your historical reference.
And again, The Craft was filmed on the West Coast, right? So they're going to use the West Coast pronunciation. And they had an advisor there from Covenant of the Goddess who was from California. So she would have said it in her California way.
Isn't that funny? Well, speaking of support, I was real excited to see that you have a Patreon page. Tell us about that.
It's a weird kind of thing. It's something that I thought I would never do. And memberships, and most people who are there, like, use the $2 membership. It's not necessarily about, you know, trying for me to make a lot of money. It's really about trying to form a community to talk about witchcraft and magic, sort of away from the toxicness that often accompanies social media. So it's a place, it's a secure space where people can talk about books and magic and witchcraft and like what kind of whiskeys they like to drink or whatever it is. Oftentimes, you know, we talk about the show Loki or whatever. So it's about that more than anything else. It's about kind of forming a community. I have a lot of overlap with Thorne Mooney's Patreon. We have a lot of the same people in both of our groups. I think we track similar readers, so that's fun. It's a place for me to put old writings that are not available online. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I used to publish a magazine called The Wiccan Read with my friend Dwayne Sorter when in Lansing, Michigan. And the Wiccan Read articles that I've written should be definitely never seen again because they're terrible. However, they're on my Patreon page. So if anybody wants that history, that's fun. I also do previews of books, things that didn't make the book. Like there's an excerpt from the Horned God book. It's an entire chapter that got cut out of the book. So there are all these kind of little bonus things if people like my writing. But to me, it's mostly about community. That's why I wanted to do it. I did quit. So in the intro that you did, I did quit Pathios. April. Yeah, that was like my last month of being in charge of Pathios Pagan. And this is kind of something to do to kind of fill in that void in my day when I would have been doing Pathios work. So it's fun, though. I read somebody like on Twitter, like they were like, I will never, ever have a Patreon page. And everything on my author page is free, you know, and I don't think people realize how difficult it is to be a pagan author. A lot of people do this full time, and it's not full time pay. You know, the average author makes $1 a book. It's very small money. You know, I'm lucky that I get invited to events, but even if my airfare is paid to go to that event and I get a free place to stay, it's likely costing me something. Yeah, I still have to eat.
Absolutely.
Sometimes they give you free food too, but. You know, even then, you know, maybe you need a snack or something. I mean, you usually are not making much money, if any. Usually I'm always losing money. My wife said we did really well in 2020 because I didn't go to any festivals, which is fair, completely fair. So, you know, like if you like an author and they have a Patreon page, you're really helping that author. And most of the pagan authors I know, their Patreon is like $2, $1. They try to make it as cheap as possible, but you really can help them out. I mean, people have rent to pay. They have, you know, food they need to put on the table, et cetera, et cetera. And it takes a long time to write these books. And a lot of writers, you know, they're working a 40-hour week on top of writing books on the side. And that's why they only write one book every 3 years. So you can really help them by being on their Patreon page.
Right. And I think there's a historical it just seems like, you know, many hundreds of years ago, we had patrons and people supported the arts and musicians, and that was normal. And so I like it. I like the idea of Patreon, that you support someone's work so that they have time to do this. So, yes, and I had a on another Circle Talk, I had a guest on, and actually she was an author. She was a musician, and she's a really strong Patreon page. And she said, I, you know, came out, and she did a mini concert, and she said, I said, you folks paid my light bill. She said, because when the pandemic hit, everything stopped for her, because, you know, she did festivals, she did concerts, everything stopped. And she said, you know, this Patreon, you know, is so important. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, I think it's exciting, and it's a way for people to become involved. So I think it's really nice.
I have a friend, I think, who makes over a thousand. She's a pagan author, and she makes over $1,000 a month on her Patreon.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know, all she does is witchcraft full time, though. And $12,000 is a lot of money, but it also is not a lot of money all at the same time.
But it's not a yearly salary, right?
Yeah, and she works her ass off on the Patreon page. I mean, she does free workshops all the time, tarot readings for people. You know, I mean, she's giving. Enough. She's giving of herself enough that it's completely worth it, you know, for what she's providing. And I think that is how most of the pagan authors that I know who are on that platform are using it. I mean, they're really trying to give back to the people who appreciate their work. I'm still figuring it out. I will admit, I don't think I'm very good at it yet, but I keep trying, and I'll keep posting my old embarrassing Wicked Read articles as long as people keep reading them.
Yeah, I mean, and you're such a history buff, so I imagine yours is really, really interesting and good. So, again, this is something that I've only known about for the past year. And like I said, a lot of artists and musicians and some authors that I have talked with on Circle Talk, that's something that's new for them and that they've delved into. And I actually had someone else who she actually has not only a patron page, but she has a community. Like, you pay a membership to belong. And just she did that just because of what you said. She said it took so much of her time, and that's what people wanted. So, yeah, I don't know. Don't you kind of see our faith evolving and changing in ways?
I do. I think it is evolving. I think we're also to the point now where there are more and more things behind the paywall on the internet. So paying to read things or getting access to music or whatever doesn't feel like it did 20 years ago when you expected everything to be free. And for me, I will always do free things online. You know, I had I'll do free like book like launches. I do free workshops online and stuff. I will always do a lot of stuff for free. I'll never put my blog behind a paywall. You know, I want to be available to as many people as possible, but some people just want a little extra. And I think that's, you know, fabulous. And I'm really appreciative of that. And yeah, we are changing. I mean, people act like we're this faith that's really been around, this community that's been around for hundreds or thousands of years. And while we might sometimes call it the old religion, it's really a pretty modern thing, right? I mean, it's only
since the 50s.
Yeah, since the 1950s, and
Gerald, published his book is really when it started.
We're still figuring things out, and it takes a while to figure things out. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
No religious tradition was built in a day.
Do you see big differences between how things that we do here than what they do in England? Like, do they have Patreon pages? I mean, do they do similar things?
I think that they do some similar things. I know the festival scene is really different. They don't do the week-long campouts like we do, you know, especially in the Southeast, Northeast, and Midwest, where those are much more common. They don't really exist on the West Coast, sadly, but they don't do those sort of things. You know, like a lot of times their big events are one day long. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody goes home. So there is some difference there. You know, I'm trying to think of my favorite people over in the UK, and I don't think a lot of them have Patreon pages. You know, I don't think Dave does, for instance. I mean, he has his blog. He does the stuff with Bards, Ovates, and Druids.
He's
been doing a lot of free concerts. He has his podcast, been doing a lot of free concerts. So I think you can tip Dave, like, while he's doing the free concert, and you should tip Dave.
Right.
Because Dave's amazing, right? So I do think it's a little bit different than how it is here in the States. But I think our culture is set up differently, too. Our structure is very, very different than how it is in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I've been over there a few times, but, you know, like, but again, sometimes you're just like a guest, right, in an area, and you don't get to experience it all, so you don't know exactly what everybody goes through necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. I have not been to England. It is on my wish list. I've been to Italy several times, but I have not been to England. So it's definitely on my wish list. In Italy, it's real interesting. And again, I know I have known very few pagans when I was there. But here, and the only big difference, and it may simply be the people that I met, here you're like, you're pagan, and or you're Jewish, and or you're Catholic, and or you're Christian. And there it seems like everything was much more blended. That, you know, you practice this, you were a witch, but you could still go to church, and it just the green man was everywhere. I mean, in churches, I mean, it was just interesting. So, yeah, Italy was very different. So, much more casual about things.
We're very lucky. I mean, we really do have a pagan/magical community here in the United States, you know, and depending on where you live, it's bigger in some places than other places. But, I mean, we have a network of stores. We have stuff that we can buy. We have festivals that people can go to. We have a whole subculture of pagan music, and we have publishers that cater directly to pagans. I don't think in Europe, especially outside of English-speaking areas where they're sort of still catching up, that they have that. So we're really blessed. I mean, we feel sometimes, you know, like we're this small marginal thing, but if there are 2 million pagans in the United States, which is sort of the current estimate, and you know, there are 350 million people in the US, that might seem like a small number, but it's larger than some other small religious groups. I mean, it's equal to the number of Muslims in the United States. It's equal to it's more than the amount of Amish in the United States. We have a culture here, and, you know, if you look for it, you can find it and participate in it. If you don't look for it and you just expect it to come and knock on your door, you'll probably be very disappointed.
Right. I don't understand how you have, with doing all what you do, I don't understand how you have time to run 2 Kevins too.
I didn't say that.
You
and
Ari
often.
Must be very organized.
You know, it's... As I said, they don't necessarily meet all that often, but I think a lot of it is, you know, we have a good group of witches that we work with, so we don't have to do a whole lot of stuff. Like, it might be at our house, we might nominally sort of run things, but everybody participates, and that really makes it easy. So many groups you see, they're really just about one person, right? And that one person leads the ritual, does the ritual, organizes the ritual, organizes the space of the ritual. Nobody else really participates. They just sort of stand around. And I feel like we're lucky that we're in a coven where everybody's participating. And that makes it so much easier to do.
Yeah, those other covens usually blow up.
Yeah. If you stand in the east in our circle, you're just calling the east. You don't have a way out of it. You have to participate.
See, that's not, I mean, that is nice. That is really, really, that is really good. So we don't have much time left. Do you have any words of wisdom to leave us with?
Oh, my Lord. that always frightens me. You know, be nice to other people. You know, be nice. Nothing is holy writ. Use what works. Throw out what doesn't work. That's what witchcraft is about. You know, listen to other people. Have conversations. You know, I think my motto in life is don't be a dick. I try really hard not to be.
I really like that. And be open. Mm-hmm. Just be open.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think most people have good intentions, even if we disagree with them sometimes. So, mm-hmm. you know, I just try to listen to people and assume the best instead of assuming the worst. And, you know, and if, you know, you're practicing witchcraft, paganism, do it. Practice it. It's more than just reading books. It's about doing the stuff.
Absolutely.
And sometimes,
so many students who have 10 books on candle magic, but they've never touched a candle.
Yeah. You know, it's about the doing. The mysteries are in the doing. The mysteries aren't in the reading. The mysteries aren't in arguing on Facebook or posting a picture to Instagram. You know, it's about doing the work. And that's one reason I love Covens, is that's where we get to do the work. Like, writing about witchcraft is fun. Like, you know, most people would, you know, die for a job like that. I get it. You know, it is. But it's not as much fun as people think. What's really fun is, after a week of writing about witchcraft, being able to go to the ritual room and lighting some candles and some incense and being in a group with other witches and chanting and feeling that power and that energy. That's really where the
Absolutely.
Magic happens. That's the best.
Absolutely. I totally agree. So I am not a social media girl. So tell
Good for
me
you.
Those, well, I'm just old school. Tell me, where do you have Instagram? Tell our listeners where all they can find you. Do you have Facebook? What do you have?
I mean, there's Facebook. I'm a Gen Xer, so, I mean, that feels like the Gen X platform these days, Facebook, mm-hmm. the old and tired. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at PanMankey. That's my last name, Mankey, with the name of my favorite god in front of it, PanMankey. I am not on TikTok, though. There's just some lines I'm not willing to cross as of yet. So that's
yeah,
it.
TikTok,
if you Google
though.
Me, yeah, if you Google me, I'm the first thing that comes up. If you scroll deep enough, you'll find a Jason Mankey who is a preacher for a Christian church.
I bet he's
that one
on you.
Yeah, he probably doesn't like me very much. That one is definitely not me. Definitely not me.
Oh, that is so fun. Well, you have been absolutely delightful. Thank you so much. You're obviously very, very busy. Thank you for taking time out from writing books and coming and talking with us.
Anytime. This has been really lovely. Questions were great. You all are always so nice to me. I love Circle. I love everybody involved with Circle. I just have so much respect for all of you, and I really do. And when I say love, it's not just an empty platitude. I really do mean that.
Well, we laugh because we talk about dropping the Queen Selena's name, but Selena does love you. So anyway, you're a favorite among us. So thank you so much for coming and being here with us tonight. And we won't wait another 2 years. We will definitely have you on again sooner. I'll put you in my book.
It's all good, Deborah. It's been fun. We'll talk again.
And if you all would like to support Jason, you can visit his Patreon page at www.patreon.com/PanMankey. And as he said, it's PanMankey. Besides Jason, I want to thank Jeanette and David Ewing, our sound engineers, for their technical expertise. And finally, I want to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all the shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, September 7th, and we'll be chatting and listening to the music of Lou Guru. I look forward to being with you all again, so please come back. We're now going to transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Round and round the maypole, weaving white and red we go, to celebrate the season and the Lord and his lady. The horned god guarantees strength and vitality, and sacred marriage to his queen, the horned god gives his blessing. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. The bellfire burning bright will blaze far into the night. In sacred grove and moonlight, the king stag is dancing. We drink a cup of revelry to growth and fertility. Spring has come, we've planted seeds, the horned god gives his blessing. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. At first ray of dawn he bids farewell to his queen. The Lord and his lady will meet again All Hallows Eve. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire. Blessed be the horned god, king of the wild hunt. Blessed be the horned god around the Beltane fire.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.